The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
There is a little saying that mindfulness is easy. What's difficult is remembering to do it. And there is something very easy about mindfulness, very simple. A teacher I studied with in India said that if it's not easy, it's not vipassana, it's not mindfulness. Many times people are trying to make it more complicated, engineer their practice, analyze their life, do many, many things, trying to accomplish something, try to become concentrated, all kinds of things that makes it more difficult, more complicated than mindfulness needs to be. And the simplest explanation of mindfulness is to have a clear knowing of what's happening as it's happening. So just be clearly present for the simplicity, the directness of your life here. Buddhist practice, distinct from mindfulness practice, is also simple in its essence, though sometimes it's to say it the way I'm going to say it can make it seem very difficult. But the essence of Buddhist practice is certainly to be mindful for everything, but for the things that you're mindful of, things that you're aware of in this world, we don't cling to it. No clinging to anything. And those two things, be present for your life and don't cling to anything, if you just followed those, everything would just open up quite easily for you. Realistically, however, it takes much more than that. Realistically, you know, we're more complicated beings and it's a lot more to try to understand. But it's important to keep in the back of your mind that it's, you know, in essence, it's a pretty simple thing. People will sometimes go on meditation retreats and find a certain kind of simplicity of being, a certain clarity, a certain kind of non-clinging that is very meaningful. And then they want to try to bring that or have that in daily life as well. And one of the great questions that people bring me that I really appreciate is, how do I integrate this practice into my daily life? How do I take what happens on retreat, what happens in meditation, how do I take the mindfulness and bring it into my life as a whole? And I love it because many times in our modern life, people live compartmentalized lives where we, you know, we work, we do, you know, different things that we do, and things are all kind of in their compartments. And for spirituality, some people compartmentalize their spiritual life to, you know, Sunday morning if you go to church or something, or Monday evening if you come to IMC, and, you know, something you do in a particular setting at a particular time, but, you know, you might meditate in the morning, but it's not something that you kind of bring to the rest of your life. But the quest to try to bring it to the rest of your life is a great thing. I love hearing that interest. And so how do we do that? How do we bring our practice of mindfulness, maybe the practice of not clinging, to the rest of our life? And I'd like to continue this theme of something that's very simple. And I'd like to offer you a couple of very simple ways that can take great strides in accomplishing this. And we'll give you some of the benefits that come from kind of being on retreat. You know, we're on meditation retreats, we devote ourselves to practice all day long, and you get a lot of momentum going in the practice. You know, it's like everything is integrated, everything is folded into the mindfulness practice. There's nothing outside. So how do you do that in daily life? And if you can do that, then you'll get some of the benefits of being on retreat, and you get some of the benefits of living a monastic life. I lived many years as a monastic Buddhist monk, and I have a lot of experience with it, and I benefited a lot from it. What I'm about to tell you will get you, if you kind of do this 20% of your day or something, that doesn't have to be a very high percentage. You could start having some of the benefits that come from immersing yourself into in a Dharma culture, in a Dharma practice, you know, practicing all the time. So the first thing to say is just do one thing at a time. I know that's difficult. But do one thing at a time, or at least 20% of the time. You know, if you can get up to 20%, that's pretty good. Many people, the way they live their lives, many ways people drive their cars. Just drive your car. And I used to say, you know, don't listen to the radio. Now I say, don't have your cell phone on. Don't talk on the phone. You know, don't text for sure. Just drive. But just do one thing at a time. So if you're doing the dishes, just do the dishes. You know, occasionally it's very nice when you're eating, just eat. Don't have the radio, don't have the TV on, your computer on, don't have the news, just eat. If you're, I think more and more in our society, people are trying to maximize how much they do and trying to be efficient. And multitasking becomes one of the ways that people try to do that. And some people are pretty adept at it. And I think it's a kind of a self-perpetuating phenomena where the more we multitask, the more we are busy and do many things, there's a kind of speeding up of the brain that goes on, the search quality of the brain, it's searching and wanting and going, that it becomes a habit to do that. And after a while, the habit becomes so strong that it becomes normal. This is just normal, what the normal brain is. And people forget that it's possible for the brain to be relaxed and calm and settled and not kind of just going from one thing to the other. Probably some of you by now have had the experience of a screen brain. You know, you're a web brain, where it's so easy to surf the web and look for information and check the news. And there's a kind of an automatic kind of like, let's do that, let's do this, let's go jump over here. And we're just following a trail, and there's this momentum, and sometimes it doesn't even feel necessarily good, but it's kind of like almost like an addiction sometimes, like do the next. Or it can seem so important to have the cell phone on all the time, or the computer, you know, this wonderful thing that whoever figured out how to do mail on the computer provided us with this ping, a little bell or something that tells us you have an email. And I tend to turn that off because it must be some kind of reptilian instinct or something that deep in our brain that when there's a ding, like you say, like I should check that. And so I'm doing something, ding, oh, got to check. And so then I'm not doing this one thing at a time. So if you can give yourself over to do one thing at a time, so while you're doing the dishes, just do the dishes. While you're eating, just eat. When you're driving, just drive. When you're walking, just walk. It's amazing how many people are checking their phones when they're walking. You know, I mean, heaven forbid that you have an idle time. You have important, we have so much important things to check. And it's right there in our palm of our hands, you know, it's quite something. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but if what you want to do is to develop your capacity for mindfulness, if what you want to do is to steady the mind so you have a capacity to really be present in a full and connected way to your life, you want to train the mind, settle the mind to be able to do that. And so just do one thing at a time. And it doesn't have to be all the time. It's, you know, 20% of the time more than you're doing now. But look for opportunities in your day where you can take even just 5 minutes or 10 minutes or half an hour, just do one thing. Give yourself over to it. In the longer periods of time that you do one thing, things start happening differently physiologically in the brain and the body perhaps, where you kind of settle in. You go through some of the bumps initially. It's kind of like if some of you who have taken up like I took up jogging many years ago, running many years ago. And there was a whole cycle of what it was like for me to start my running, and I hated it. You know, there's a lot of work. And then I would kind of work through it, and then I had questions, well, should I be doing this? I have other things I could be doing. And then slowly I would settle in. And after a while, the breathing, the body, the brain, everything was kind of in harmony, working together. And at times it felt kind of effortless to be running. because I finally had arrived in the running. I was just there in the running. So the same thing, I've done this with doing the dishes at home. Initially when I do the dishes, what? I have to do dishes again? and I have all these important things to do, you know, and there's important emails to check. And, you know, and lots of things I could be doing with dishes. So I have little voices like that go on. And so I do it, you know, I'm there, I can feel physiologically a certain kind of impatience or restlessness about being there with it, something as simple as the dishes. And then to give myself over fully to the experience of the dishes. And then some of that works through and settles away, and I let go of these distractions and other things. And by the time I'm finishing the dishes, I'm not enjoying doing the dishes. I'm just there with it, and I'm not really ready for it to stop, but there's no more dishes. I don't know if this is a good example of doing approximately one thing at a time. This weekend I went to the supermarket, and yesterday, I didn't have a lot to get in the supermarket, but there was a lot of people there. So I decided I'm just going to be in the supermarket. The one thing is the supermarket. And so I kind of wasn't just only zeroing in the one thing to get my thing and get out of there. I was in the supermarket. And so I was getting my things, but I kind of opened my awareness up. I'm really here. This is where I'm at. And I was fascinated to be in the supermarket. It helped the fact, for some reason, there were a lot of little kids Sunday. You know, it's one of the ways parents need to multitask. You know, two things. Parents have to do two things at once often, or three things and four things. It's kind of like part of the deal, right? And so you bring your kid with you when you go to the market because, anyway, so there are all these little kids. And I kind of thought, wow, I felt like I was in a bazaar. You know, this was like a timeless experience, being in the American supermarket. I've been to bazaars like in Marrakesh and India and all kinds of places and in all over the world. And there's something timeless about people showing up at the market and going around. And usually these places are crowded and you're jostling and moving around people and getting your things and having to stop and wait until someone goes by. And I just got happier and happier being at the supermarket. So this is like a timeless human experience. I mean, it's timeless. I mean, I don't know, timeless, but for a few thousand years, going to the bazaar and having to dodge around people for getting their things and gathering their food for their family. So that was a more complicated getting, just being doing one thing at a time because, it was, you know, but it was just there in the market. I wasn't trying to rush out, get somewhere else. And I just took my time and just it opened up to this great delight and appreciation of people. It's particularly nice to do only one thing at a time if you meditate in the morning after your meditation, because it helps perpetuate or continue some of the subtleness and calm that comes from the meditation. If you get up from the meditation, you're immediately trying to do 10 different things, then your mind starts being split. And the compartmentalized mind, the mind that's rushing in many different directions, fragmented mind, is not very helpful for really being present, to really be present in a high quality way. So we're looking for a high quality way of being present. And I'm suggesting one thing at a time. The second thing that's related to this, I said I'd recommend two things. The second thing is have follow-through. See things through to the end. So do one thing and do that thing to the end. So within reason, of course. I mean, if your house is burning, don't just continue washing the dishes. there's something, so follow through with what you're doing. Because to sustain attention of one task helps with this subtleness, working through the cycles and really arrive. It takes a while sometimes to arrive and really be there with what you're doing. And so by staying in it until you finish, it allows that to happen. But more interesting is that when you sustain your attention on something, one of the things you get to learn about yourself is how difficult that is. You get to learn about the forces of distraction, the voices that say something else. And so the kind of eye-opener to me about seeing this was many years ago when I was walking across a relatively small apartment where I lived, but from one end to the other, to put my clothes from the washer into the dryer. That was a task that I was going to do. And the one thing I was going to do was to walk across the house. On the way, it took me a while to get across this little apartment, because on the way there was this to take care of, and the newspaper was there. I checked the news, and then there's the mail. I'll go out and get the mail and come back. And there's all these other things that kind of got my attention. There's nothing wrong with that, but if I was committed to stay, I'm just going to follow this through and get to the laundry area, and not give in to all these other urges to do something else. I develop more freedom not to give in to urges, a certain strength of ability to stay present. But also it gives me a chance to see what those urges are, to recognize them, to see them in a different way than if we give in to them. So to do one thing at a time and not give in to the urges to do something else. So if you're, like for me, I'm writing on the computer, and so I have this practice, okay, when I'm writing, I'm just writing. And I give myself a length of time where I'm going to write, and I'm not going to check email, because the email lives in the same box, in the same little machinery, so it's not so close, so I just check. And I don't check the news. The news is always new, so you want to find out. And I was surprised after a while having a laptop, the tendency to want to check news much more often in the day than I used to. I was content in the old days in the morning, reading the morning paper. But now, the news is newer in the afternoon. So you want to get the latest. So I watch my mind with these tendencies, and I try not to give in to them, because sometimes it's innocent, it's fine to know, but sometimes it's a way of distracting myself, sometimes it's a way of being restless, and the restlessness has a way, wants to go someplace. Sometimes it's there's a movement to avoidance. I'm bored now, like when I'm writing, oh, it's not working, I don't like this writing, it's hard, so let's do something else. And so it's an easy escape. So when you follow something through, you might get the pleasure of just doing one thing and enjoying it. Or you might get the wisdom that comes from starting to knowing what goes on in your mind, what distracts you, what motivates you, what your beliefs are, what your values are. What goes on that makes it difficult for you to follow something through that you're doing. And that can happen on a large scale. That can happen with something like that takes years to accomplish. Go to school, or get training for some job or do something. You have to really sustain something, some projects. But it also happens in the short term. Something as simple as doing the dishes. Are you sustaining the attention just to do the dishes? To do one thing at a time, in some situations, if you're not, if you're alone, you're not going to speak maybe. But it's really great to give yourself times during the day when you're not involved in conversations, when you're not involved in social conversations with people. And so you can kind of spend more undistracted time just being with one thing at a time. And then see what happens when you try to sustain that. See the urges to be in conversation. See your desires are to be in conversation with people and what goes on. You'll learn a lot about yourself. And then the opposite is also true, especially maybe if you're shy or maybe don't spend much time with people. Give yourself time, sustain time to be with someone. Say, you're going to go out and have tea with someone and you're going to be in conversation for just with that person for a length of time. And then see what happens when the movement, the tendencies in the mind, well, maybe that's long enough. I don't really want to anymore. The introverts, so I'm an introvert, so, sometimes I need to encourage myself. Stay here and be in conversation. And then I learn about myself in that process. So these two things, doing one thing at a time, sometimes, as much as you care to do it, but to look for opportunities to do it more often than you are doing it now. And the other is, when you're doing one thing at a time, sustain it until the end. Follow it through. And in that following through, see what you learn about yourself. Learn about what makes it difficult to follow something through. Learn what the benefits are. And as you kind of begin to feel the goodness, the benefits of doing one thing and doing one thing all the way through, then hopefully those benefits, the pleasure you get from it, the benefits you get from it, is part of what nourishes you and inspires you to keep doing that, to keep that going. And I think that for many people in our modern life, we need to have an intentional life where we take a little bit of control or a little bit intentionality around how we use our time and how we engage in what we're doing. Because without us taking some control, the habits of mind, the neurosis of the mind, the tremendous forces of distraction in our society are going to keep pulling us left and right in all kinds of ways and fragmenting us. But if we can choose, okay, this time, this half an hour, I'm not going to answer email. I'm just going to be with this. This afternoon, Saturday afternoon, I'm not going to check email. Or when I go shopping, I'm just going to go shopping. That's all I'm going to do. And it's remarkable to be in the supermarket and also to watch the people on their phones in the supermarket, which I guess is a nice thing to do. But it also is not just one thing. So if you rather than hearing that it's a good idea from someone else that to do one thing at a time, when you start feeling the benefits of it, then hopefully it's something you'll gravitate towards. And it'll become kind of second nature to give yourself over to one thing. And what you'll hopefully discover is that the greatest sense of well-being a person can have doesn't come from doing more things. Doing things is nice, but doing things, especially a lot of things, doesn't really allow for the settledness, for the feeling at really feeling at home in your heart, feeling at home in yourself. And to be able to settle back and be at home requires us to not automatically give in to the momentum to keep doing, keep moving, keep fidgeting, keep being distracted, keep, you know, entertaining ourselves, keep doing things. But to settle back. And one step along that way is to do one thing at a time. So those are my thoughts for today. And now it's your turn. Do you have any comments, questions, testimonials about doing one thing at a time that you'd like to bring up? Or anything else?
Since nobody else.
Be nice.
Christina, and it's my first time here. So, since nobody else is saying anything, I like to practice only one thing when I'm in the bathroom. Mm. And I find it very useful because it's a time when we like to be distracted. I've even heard people on conference calls in bathroom stalls. Yeah.
With a mute.
Yeah. I think it was Bhante Buddhirakita in New York. I did a day long with him, and he suggested having a mindfulness practice on the toilet and in the bathroom.
Yes.
And it was...
It's a great place.
Very eye-opening.
It's a great place. It's also going to be very pleasurable. Behind you, Jim. If you could say your name, too.
My name is Azeen. So I love your advice on doing things one thing at a time. My struggle with that is that I feel like I'm in a rush. So I can be present at the grocery store, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, I need to get out of here because I need to go home and make dinner because someone's coming over, and after that. So that's kind of like, how do you maintain being present without, and kind of, I guess, maintaining your time restrictions throughout the day as well? How do you balance
those?
It's
a great question for our life. So I don't know your situation well enough to know, but I'll tell you a few things that I've learned about that question. One is the importance of looking at your priorities and actually kind of spending some quality time looking at your day, your week, and what you do with your time and what you think your life is about. And see if you need to do everything that you do. Can you cut back? Can you do less so that you have more space to more time to do things in a relaxed way, not to rush? I learned this when I had young kids, and before I had kids, you know, I got kids when I was late in life, so I was kind of set in some of my ways. And one of them was I liked reading the morning newspaper. And so after my morning meditation, and kids weren't quite up yet, and I'd read the paper and have breakfast. It was all very great. And then I'd have to get the kids out of bed and get them dressed and make the breakfast and make their lunches and get them in the car. And by the time they were in school, I was exhausted. Literally. It was like a big chore. And so after a while, I started looking at that, and I realized that part of the reason I was so exhausted was there was always a rush at the end to get them out the door. I realized that there was one piece in that morning ritual that I could easily drop and make a lot of space to make everything else go in a more relaxed way. And that was my cherished newspaper reading. And so I gave it up. And then it was a lot easier to do this whole thing. So there might be some way of looking at your life and see, if you really need to do everything? A lot of people in our country, and maybe you as well, spend a lot of time on TV, watching TV shows. Is that something, can some of that go? So that you can do things not so much in a rush, make more space for doing things. So that's one thing. The other thing is planning. It's related to this, is to plan ahead. That it's a little bit unfortunate how much we Buddhist teachers talk about being in the present moment. Because then you think, oh, I'm not allowed to plan. But planning to be in the present moment is sometimes a really good idea. Because you want to kind of look ahead into your day and kind of try to have a realistic sense of how long it takes to do things. And then so set it up, to go shopping and be relaxed for, I need to kind of start earlier. So all this means a reflective life, a life where you're thinking about things and reflecting about it, not just relying on the power of just being mindful and present at this moment. And then as you start planning better and looking at your priorities, maybe I learned many years ago, someone said that a wise life requires us to choose between doing, I forget exactly how he said it, but there's so many good things to do in life. A wise person has to decide which of the good things to do, because you can't do it all. So, is this making some sense? Is this addressing you?
Absolutely, totally.
Should I stop? Then I'll stop. Yes, here in the front.
Just a comment.
Your name? Your name?
Jen. Just a comment that be careful about how you answer about multitasking in job interviews.
Oh, yes.
Because if you actually say anything about realistically there's only one thing you can do at a time, they don't tend to really appreciate that answer.
No. We have to be a little bit careful what we mean by one thing at a time. Because if you take it too literally, you can't do some jobs very well. So one of the great places where I worked was, I worked after I left the monastery, I worked at a restaurant, Green's Restaurant, and so forth. I was a cook there, and it was kind of like a fast order cook, it was very fast. So the doing one thing at a time there meant doing 10 things at a time But that's all I did. I was just cooking, and it was a dance. And I loved, I was spinning and turning and twirling and had different dishes up, you know, from the stove and tracking them. And I would leave at the end of the day more calm and energized than when I started the day, because I just did that. I was gave myself over completely to just doing this complicated task. If I was making pasta for someone, I'm just going to make the pasta. watch it water boil. The pizza would get burnt, you know. And so there's something about the appropriate way of giving one thing at a time in different settings means give yourself complete over to this activity. So when I was working at the monastery and I was in the kitchen there, I started off as a prep cook in the kitchen in the monastery. And there, the idea of doing one thing at a time was took the form of how can I really be here with the carrot as I'm chopping the carrot? And I learned a lot about how much I didn't want to be there by having that task. And it was a great, I benefited so much from those carrots and those onions, because I learned a lot about being present. And so the task was, how can I give myself to what I was doing? When I was a fast order cook at Greens, there wasn't an issue about giving myself my attention. I couldn't give you just the carrot. But the task was, how do I surrender to this? How do I surrender to this complicated dance of all these things at once? So yes, so job interviews, but also during some jobs. A friend of mine was a kind of a long-time Zen practitioner, and he ended up being kind of working for Smith and Hawkins. And so he hired a few people who came out of the monastery because he knew them. These Zen students make really good workers. And it turned out it didn't work out because of this, like this kind of little bit simplistic idea of just one thing at a time. You pick up the watering can or whatever they're selling, you put it in the box fully, completely, you take both hands, you close it, you know, it's like a tea ceremony, right? And you're not being paid to do tea ceremony as you mail something off. You're paid to do it quickly and efficiently. So yes.
So yeah. Thanks for all the advice. I've been trying to, I'm an entrepreneur, so, you know, I have to do
more than one thing at a time.
Yeah, and a couple of things I've found, just want to share. One thing is called a Pomodoro technique, which is, you know, it's called a Pomodoro technique. So basically you just do 25-minute, like, focused activities, and you took a 4 or 5 minute break. Mm. So you try to do, like, I try to do like 4 or 4 to 6 Pomodoros, and that's so efficient throughout the day, even if it's 25 minutes, but it's so focused and it's so singular.
Yes.
Of course, you first start the day with prioritizing things and what you're working, and then I think that's helping a lot. And there's another software where it lets you, it blocks out all the websites, and then it asks you, what are the causes you hate the most, or the, you know, party you hate the most. Yeah. And then it lets you visit other sites if you want, but then you have to donate like $10 a minute to these causes that you hate. so the money goes to them, and they get a cut. They don't charge you, but they take half the money, and half the money goes to the causes you hate. So.
So if you have a real addiction to the websites to get going online, you can get this software. And
it's software is for free, but then you tell them all the charities you hate or all the causes you hate or whatever.
And you give them your credit card.
Yeah. And then they bill you $10 a minute or something.
Great.
Yeah. Every time you go somewhere, it's like browse as much as you want, read as much news as you want. We'll send you a bill.
I wonder if that would work for my thoughts. Every time I have a thought that I shouldn't have, I'll
like your credit card. I'll send you a bill.
great. So what else? What else is on your minds? It can be on some other topic or continue in this one. Yes, Trudy.
Microphone right behind you.
Oh, thank you.
And your name?
Oh, Trudy. I've been trying to work with this for, I don't know, maybe a week or so. And the discovery that is amazing to me is that I don't even realize when I'm doing two things. It feels like one. Mm.
And what are the benefits of you discovering?
Well, it's new, but the benefit is I feel more relaxed. Mm-hmm. Not so frantic about getting things done.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. So here.
Thanks. My name is Fadi. And the question is this distinction, what we're talking about, what is the dance that involves many things in the one thing?
Yes.
And the ability to know the difference is,
yeah.
It feels like to do these many things like you're doing in the kitchen, it takes that skills. Probably the longer you've worked there, the more you will do more of it and you enjoy more of it, and maybe you can handle the checks for the customer as well or something. So it becomes one thing. That's the issue here, is the distraction become part of the daily activity, and if I do the Pomodoro, maybe it will be, okay, I'm doing these three things, and they randomly will happen, and I will reply to them. So,
right.
I mean...
So different tasks, yeah. So I think that it's good to train on doing something simple, and so to have certain things, very simple and very, you know, just one thing, really just one thing. Some tasks are more complicated, and you have to. It involves many things, but there's an integrity to one area that many things are involved, but you're just there for that. And some things are clearly separate activities, and we're trying to do so much. I mean, an innocent one maybe is, you know, you could be having breakfast and reading the news. You know, the two aren't inherently connected.
Right.
You know, so, so you can kind of cut back and get some of the benefits just eating, and then afterwards just reading. And then the mind isn't split, it isn't going back and forth. And some people isn't just two things, it's three or four things going on at once. There might be, the radio is on, the news is on the screen, breakfast is happening, and your partner is trying to talk to you.
Yeah, and that maybe, you know, for me specifically, it's hard to focus on one thing. I have attention issues with, you know, challenge with uh-huh. being focused. So it becomes a lot easier to be paying attention to everything else. So I'd love to take on this challenge and start separating some of these things.
I think if you have attention issues, you can make a difference. The mind can be changed to some degree. But you want to start small. I don't know your mind and what kind of attention issues you have, but sometimes very short spurts are what's called for. So maybe 25 minutes is too long, and maybe 3 minutes. Hmm. Just give yourself over fully for 3 minutes, and maybe that for you is a growing edge.
Thanks.
To start flossing, start with one. Floss one tooth first.
Yeah.
That's recommended by that habit guru at Stanford, that you floss one tooth.
Do that tooth really well.
You're done flossing for the day.
Yeah. Good. And one of the things I said, I really meant that if what you want to do is to integrate your practice in your daily life, if you want to get some of the benefits that come from being on retreat or even being a monastic, if 20% of the more of your day is spent really giving yourself over to one thing, to really doing that one thing fully, completely, and learning also in certain settings, to do that with your, include your body. So, you know, if you have a task, this is what I learned when I was in the kitchen in the monastery, was to bring my full body into the activity I was doing. You know, I could have the idea that I'm kind of there with it with one hand. I mean, I'm doing one thing, but I'm just kind of like one hand was chopping and one side of my body was literally turned towards the door because I didn't want to be there. And I had to kind of bring my body back to the cutting board and then back to the cutting board. And but to bring your body, when I was in monastery in Japan, I would sometimes I would carry the rice pot that the monks were going to have their meal, and I'd pick it up by handle by one hand, and I'd get reprimanded for that, because when you pick up the rice pot, you do it with two hands, and this idea of you do it with give yourself you're fully to the activity you're doing, hold it with two hands, so you're really there for it, and there's a world of difference between, you know, if you're picking up a glass. One of my really transformative experiences I had early on in my meditation career on retreat was picking up a cup of tea and drinking it. Just picking up the cup. Really be there for it. It's one thing, you know, it's fine to pick it up with one arm and just really be there for it. It's something else to do this one thing at a time with your whole body participating. And come down with both hands and grab it. So there's kind of like your whole, both sides of your body kind of integrated and engaged and involved. There's more integration, there's more involvement, there's more absorption in the activity when you bring your body into what you're doing as well. So one of the ways to do one thing at a time that you get more benefit from it is to really think about how can you bring your body fully into this one activity you're doing. So if you do that, you know, 20% of the time of the day, or just increase how much you do, you'll start getting a lot of the benefits that come from the being in a monastery where your context of your life is constantly being supported to be present for your experience and what's happening. It's a great thing to do. So, okay, one more question, then we'll stop. Is the mic...
I'm Joanne, and I just have a question about all of the talk and feedback. Is the point to establish oneness with everything? That's nice, what I'm getting.
Yeah, it's for some people hold that up as the point. It's a nice thing to do to have an experience of oneness. In Buddhism, which you know, it's only the Buddhist point of view. The experience of oneness is just another experience. It's a nice experience, but it's not held up as being the ultimate experience. What's held up in Buddhism to be more ultimate is to be free. And freedom is not an experience. It's a mind and heart that doesn't cling.
Okay.
And so there's a reluctance to make an experience the point. But what's the point is to have enough insight, self-understanding, presence, mindfulness, to understand when we're clinging, when we're resisting, when we're contracted, when we're closed, and then learning how to set that free so the heart is free and at home in itself. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, so... I wish you well. I hope that you and your society benefits from your doing one thing at a time, especially when you drive.